Coming up next, we've got one of the greatest entrepreneurs in the history of broadcast radio. I'm sure you've heard his story. Norm Pattiz was a TV sales exec in Los Angeles in 1976. He had an idea for a syndicated radio show called The Sound of Motown. Because he was new to the industry, he did things that others didn't think could be done, and it worked. He created a syndication company, added Dr. Demento, who I loved for years, added live concerts. This became Westwood One. He has now started an exciting new venture he'll tell you about. And so let's give a big hand for our point of view speaker this year, Norm Pattiz.
Thanks, Kurt. I've been a cheerleader for radio for 35 years, maybe longer. And as such, the idea of seeing radio at any place but at the apex of where it ought to be is distressing to me. And, you know, I left Westwood One in 2010, and at the time there were a number of people who I had originally signed to the company and what have you, and they had said to me, hey, look, we'd rather have an involvement with you. So I started Courtside Entertainment Group, which was really just a little boutique production outfit, and Bill O'Reilly came over, and Dr. Drew and the Loveline Show, and Laura Ingram, and a bunch of other people, mostly in the music area. And that was, you know, just to sort of keep my hand in it. It was really more for shits and giggles than anything else. But all of a sudden, I got introduced to a young guy. His name was Kit Gray. We were introduced by a mutual friend, and my friend said, you really ought to meet this kid. You know, he's representing some podcasts, you know. And I had the same experience. You know, I had an experience with podcasts that was about 7 or 8 years old, you know, when you had to download it to a computer and then upload it to something else to be able to listen to it. It was really cumbersome. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know whether I want to do that. But I took that meeting. And, you know, he was working at home by himself in his, you know, in his apartment in Marina Del Rey with his dog. And he was, you know, making about $1.5 million a year and doing everything himself. And, you know, he kind of reminded me of me when I started Westwood One. Because when I started Westwood One, the reason that it's called Westwood One is because I had one radio show, one employee, and we were in Westwood. You know, very creative, right? And that one radio show was a 24-hour show called The Sound of Motown. Went out and sold it. I came from the television business. I had been the sales manager of a television station in Los Angeles for a number of years, KCOP, which at the time stood for Keep Changing Our Programming. We were the number one radio television station in the market simply because we had more ones than anybody else. But anyway, I took this meeting, and I thought, you know, this kid feels a lot like what I was doing when I started Westwood One with $200,000 worth of revenue and $10,000 of my own. And then, you know, many years later, Westwood One had $600 million worth of revenue, was a public company at a $4 billion market cap. And I thought, there's an opportunity to do Westwood One in the digital age, because one of the main things that always bothered me about Westwood One was that I had to convince program directors to carry programs I thought were great. And in the digital age, you don't have to do that. You really don't have to do it. It's purely democratic. If you can find an audience, if there is an audience out there, you've got something. And if that audience is packaged in the right way to an advertiser and it's gone out and presented, and there's a certain amount of evangelism, which we knew a lot about in the early days of syndication because there wasn't anybody else doing that, there's a great opportunity. So when Kit walked in, he was representing, I don't know, 20 shows or something, and they were pretty good shows. He had Adam Carolla and some other shows. And he was generating about 20 to 30 million downloads a month, which shows you that the shows that he had were good programs and programs that generated good audiences. Well, we started working off that premise. Westwood One wasn't a distributor of programming. It was a producer of programming. So we started producing our own programming. It's an interesting way that got started. As some of you may know, that I'm a big Laker fan, and I've been sitting courtside at Laker games for 30 years. I've got four between the scores table and the Laker bench. There's 8 seats. 4 of them are mine. 4 of them belong to Ari Emanuel from WME. I was telling Ari what I was planning to do, and he was saying, you know, that's kind of interesting. Why don't I set up a meeting? I'll have some of my team in there. You can tell them what you're doing. And we went in, and we told them what we were doing. And guess what? Talent agencies were looking for digital solutions for their client base, digital solutions that they could be equity partners in. So 3 hours after leaving WME, I get a call from UTA. The following day, I get a call from Brillstein Gray. I mean, these are all people I've been doing business with for years, and they all want to know what I'm doing. So we tell them. And so now, today, we've got over 200 really great podcasts, 50 of which we produce ourselves, and we're downloaded in excess of 120 million times per month. Now, let me say something about the things that stand in the way of podcasting really breaking out, because podcasting is going to be breaking out. And for people who think that podcasting is threatening to radio, you got it so wrong. You got it completely wrong. On demand will be the savior of radio. It's not going to take anything away from radio, because radio right now, broadcast traditional radio, is going like this, and in some cases like this. And there's nothing sexy about it anymore. There's no sex appeal. I liked Westwood One. I created Westwood One because I thought it was showbiz. There's no showbiz in radio anymore. When was the last time a national personality was created in radio? Got to think back a little bit, don't you? We create in podcasting huge personalities that deliver millions of downloads every month. The kinds of personalities that you wouldn't think of if you were talking about network radio, if you were talking just about radio, because we're unconstricted by formats and we're unconstricted by program directors who have less and less to say about what they put on their radio stations every year. Because as radio gets more and more consolidated, there seem to be guys at the very, very top that think they have the answers to what goes on at local radio stations. By the way, take a look, they don't. Okay? So, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity. There's a great opportunity in the national business that was Westwood One, but I'll tell you where we're going. You know, for those of you who are out there and may own stations or be in the station business, as a matter of fact, let's see a show of hands. How many of you are in the radio business? How many of you are vendors to either radio or digital producers and so forth? How many of you are just in the digital production business? Well, there's a lot of radio people here, and thank you very much for being a digital producer. There's a lot of radio people here. What the direction that we're going in, I mean, we're already making tremendous strides in terms of getting national advertisers to accept what it is we're doing. 2 years ago, we had no brand advertisers. It was all direct response advertisers. This year, last year, we had 6 national brand advertisers. This year, we have 30, with the rest of the year still to go. So there's an opportunity here, and we're going to make the most of that opportunity, and that's an opportunity that's going to create competitors and a bigger marketplace and all those good things, and I welcome them, because we've spent the last 2 years getting oceanfront property, in the places where we need to remain competitive. You know, we've not only created our own programs, you know, that have that have huge national audiences like Adam Carolla and Dan Patrick and Steve Austin and Kathy Lee Gifford, Dennis Miller, Barstool Sports, The Nerdist, Chris Hardwick. We also have on our platform Radiolab, Freakonomics from Public Radio, and a whole lot more. But what are the names? What do these personalities all have in common? Dan Patrick, Loveline, Laura Ingram, Clark Howard. We podcast their radio shows so that it's on demand, so that consumers who can't listen to the radio show at the time that it's broadcast can listen to that show whenever they want. Or if they get to a place where they've got where they're listening to the program in their car and they got to get out of their car and go to work, they can put the pause button on and listen to it when they want to listen to it. Some of these shows that I've just mentioned have larger on-demand audiences than they do broadcast audiences. So when we make our move, which we're going to soon, watch and look and listen, we're going to start providing local podcasts for local radio stations to increase their audiences locally. So if we can just get on-demand, if we can increase the station's audience by 10% or 20%, that's a big deal. The thing that holds us back and the thing that's held everything back are metrics. You know, I'm going to say one thing about metrics. If they can't make me understand it, then I don't buy it. And the problem with digital is that you've got so many different people doing so many different things, all of which is proprietary, which means they won't open up their kimonos, and they wind up getting different answers to the same questions. So we've put together our own form of measurement, which includes digital raw download information, digital dart tagging for confirmation, and surveys that we have used through Edison Research and that we may use for others, which are being very well and widely accepted with national advertisers. So I think that it's all in keeping with what I said at the very beginning. I've been a cheerleader for radio for 35 years. I want to keep being a cheerleader for radio, but radio has got to adapt. Radio's got to get hip to what's going on. Large companies are not going to move in this space because the large companies in the radio business are so loaded with debt that if they don't do something that moves the needle lickety-split, they're not going to invest in it. And investing in podcasting right now, while it may create a great business for Norm Pattison and for some other people who are going to get into it, before it becomes a great big segment, I don't see the Clear Channels or the Cumuluses, moving into that area with any kind of energy. We're going to try and help them. We're going to try and help a lot of local radio broadcasters see the benefit of on-demand audio for local broadcasters going forward. Now, I promised Kurt that I would do 10 minutes here. And I've got 9 seconds to do that. Well, I don't know. It's actually going up now, so I've probably done it. So I'm gonna wrap it up by saying this: there's an awful lot going on. This isn't about your grandfather's radio, because I'm old enough to be your grandfather, and it's not the radio that I grew up in. The radio that where there were radio wars and stations were in the same format and they fought battles with each other and it was exciting and things were going on, or where there were talk radio stations that really got it on with each other. I miss that kind of radio. But the kind of radio that is purely democratic, which lets a listener find its audience, regardless of station formats, and creates an opportunity to expand the horizons, especially in the digital space, is here. It's here right now. I commend all of you, because if you're sitting in this room, you probably believe the same thing I do. Thank you very much, and good luck.